You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jeff Bossert. Our technical director today is Jason Croft. The producer for the program is Harriet Williamson. Our guest this afternoon is history professor Adrian Burgos. Dr. Burgos, a history professor, specializes in Latino history and African American studies at the University of Illinois. On Monday, he'll be among 12 historians and researchers gathering in Tampa for what's likely to be a one-time event. This committee is to choose among 39 players and executives from baseball's Negro Leagues for induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Its work is the result of a $250,000 grant from Major League Baseball to do a comprehensive study on the history of African Americans in baseball between the years of 1860 to 1960. After extensive research, a lengthy database of statistics was compiled, and later a screening committee that Professor Burgos also served on selected these 39 names that will be considered for Hall of Fame induction. Professor Burgos, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff, for inviting, and glad to be here.
Tell me how you first got involved in this, your profile on the U of I. You specialize, like I said, in Latino history and African American studies. But tell me about your fascination with baseball and players of different nationalities.
Well, my interest started really in my youth. I grew up in a family that loved baseball. My grandmothers were passionate about the game. And in college, I decided to put together my two pursuits, that is, my interest in baseball and history. And I pursued a college senior's thesis on baseball's introduction to the Caribbean. And there is when I first found out that the majority of Latinos during the segregated era played in the Negro Leagues and not in the major leagues. So that's when I decided I want to write a history about that particular subject.
Yeah, I had no idea. I never gave it any thought that players other than African Americans, someone that wasn't Caucasian, would be not allowed in the major leagues and had to find another way of playing.
My first book project examines that question in particular. It's called Playing America's Game, an examination of how Latinos affected the policing of the color line in professional baseball. Again, the majority of Latinos, over 300, played in the Negro Leagues during the era of segregation, whereas only 54 played in the major leagues during that same period. So that really what started me into research on the Negro Leagues, and doing that, I uncovered figures such as Alex Bompes, who's one of the individual I'm going to be writing a biography of in the future. He was Afro-Cuban-American, born in Key West, raised in Tampa, and he made his name in baseball as the owner of the New York Cubans team. And later, he would become the director of international scouting for the New York and San Francisco Giants. So he was largely responsible for bringing in the waves of Dominican stars, such as the Alou brothers and Juan Marichal, and then also signed Orlando Cepeda. And so it was a broader history that really started out of the Negro Leagues that, to me, the Shades of Glory book begins to fill out for us who follow baseball history.
Mention this book because the author of that book is also serving on the committee with you that will be voting. This kind of, I assume, release kind of coincided with this vote coming up.
Right. Both projects were sponsored by the Baseball Hall of Fame. And as smart marketers they are, they decided, the perfect time to release this book would be right around the time of the vote. It's educational. We had done this study over 5 years. And in doing that research, we learned a lot. And the product was at first an 800-page report that we submitted to the Hall of Fame. And that's what largely inspired the Hall's board of directors to put together a special election on the Negro Leagues. We learned more than we had ever had known before about the league. And that's partly because we also included the Latino story in a more focused way. Several of the voting committee members were specialists on Latin America. And so whereas previously most people who studied the Negro Leagues just looked at the story of what occurred in the States, we followed them into winter ball in this story. And then we also followed them to Mexico and to Puerto Rico and to Cuba. And that allowed us to see a fuller picture of what life was like on the other side of the racial divide.
Well, and this is on Monday, correct, when you'll be voting. And it has to be just overwhelming to go through pages and pages. I guess there was how many years compiled of Negro League statistics that weren't there before. And how were you able to weed through and choose 39 players and executives?
Well, the statistical component of this study is 3,000 pages of day-by-day stats. That's every box score that we found from 1920 to 1950 of the Negro Leagues, both the American Negro, Negro American League and the Negro National League. We input it into the statistical database. That was a project that involved over 50 researchers across the country, and we scoured over 160 newspapers and included some publications from Cuba, Puerto Rico, and Dominican Republic to get at stories and box scores and line scores of the Negro Leagues. And it has been an awesome task of preparing. I was earlier speaking with someone from the Kansas City Star and saying, you know, the amount of preparation for this vote rivals my preparation when I was taking my comprehensive exams for my doctoral degree. It's been a massive project. And you know, I never thought when I started 10 years ago on this research that one day I'd be sitting with Faye Vincent and other historians to vote on who of these men who played so long ago should be enshrined. And actually, two of these men are still with us, those being Buck O'Neill and Minnie Minoso.
Two names that Chicago baseball fans are pretty familiar with.
Quite familiar. Buck O'Neill was the first African-American coach of a Major League Baseball team with the Chicago Cubs. And Minnie Minoso, as some people tend to forget, was the very first Black Latino to play in the Major Leagues. And then he broke the color line for the Chicago White Sox. And in fact, part of the reason why he's on this ballot is in recognition that he was an integration pioneer and that this history of Black baseball, it goes beyond just what occurred in the U.S. in terms of who's coming into the major leagues and who's coming out. And so we had long discussions about whether Minnie deserved to be on this ballot. And in the end, the argument that won was the history of Black baseball is incomplete without talking about the Latinos who participated and all the integration pioneers who merited full recognition. Minnie played 12 years in the major leagues, but he lost at least 4 years to playing in the minor leagues and being blocked out of the major leagues because of the color line.
Something else I wasn't aware of is you talked about there were sanctioned Negro League teams from the early portion of the century through up, I guess, the early mid-50s. But there were other Negro League teams that weren't the Negro League sanctioned teams prior to 1900.
Right. The history of Black baseball and what we so often call Black baseball because it wasn't formal Negro League that were organized goes back to the 1870s. You have teams like the Pythians in Philadelphia that played, which were mostly middle-class African-Americans who had formed their own clubs and began to play organized baseball. And they were the founders, the builders of what would become Black baseball. The first well-known team was called the Cuban Giants. It was a team completely composed of African-Americans, but they chose to name Cuban, I argue, partly because they knew that within baseball, Cubans also already played. That story had already been established in baseball circles, particularly in the New York region where the Cuban Giants were based out of. So, there is that earlier history, and there's a number of individuals on this ballot, such as Frank Grant and others who are on there because of their play in the 19th century. Sol White was also on this ballot, was the first historian of Black baseball. He played with the Cuban Giants and a number of other professional teams. In fact, Sol White played integrated ball. One thing that many folks don't remember is that baseball wasn't truly segregated till like 1889, 1890. So that in the mid to late 1880s, we had a number of players like Sol White who played on minor league teams and others like Frank Grant, who's also on this ballot, who played on minor league teams. And Frank Grant got to the doorstep of the major leagues by playing in the International League, which was the highest level of minor league ball. So, that early history begins to show how the color line was going to really affect Black baseball. And then we move into the era in the 1900s where we see the early teams begin to organize a little bit more formally. The largest problem was that they lacked the financial resources to form leagues. But you had individuals like Rube Foster who were organizers and who really thought beyond the locality of Chicago and started to say, let's build a league out of the Midwest. The other thing that Rube Foster did, and this was based mostly on his experience of having played in Cuba, is that he made sure to bring Cuban players up. And there was a team that was based in Chicago called the Cuban Stars. And Jose Mendez was one of those early players. Jose Mendez, again, another individual who's on this ballot. And so from very early on, Foster's vision was not just a very limited local vision. He thought expansively about building a race enterprise that would service the African-American community throughout the Midwest, and then thought even more broadly. Let's include the Latinos, who, for the most part, were also being excluded from Major League Baseball.
I formerly worked in Memphis, and one weekend met with some of these players. They had a ceremony and a weekend to honor some of them. And all that they, what they kept saying is there were two major leagues. By no means was the baseball inferior to the major leagues. And I think research like yours is the first time that we're getting more people are getting a chance to see that and realize what kind of statistics they were able to compile.
And in fact, you know, World War II, that era, some historians argue that the play that was going on in the Negro Leagues was on par or in some cases better than the major leagues. Because the major leagues, because at that point in time, the U.S. Army was still segregated, the major leagues were hit a lot harder with military service. About 50 or so Negro League players were drafted into the military or served in the military during World War II. On the other hand, several hundred, 200-300 major league players. Mind you, there's only 16 major leagues at this time, clubs. And so the major leagues were hit a lot harder. And because of segregation, in this instance, the level of play in the Negro Leagues continued to rise. Again, that's because Negro League teams kept going to the Caribbean and pulling talent out of the Caribbean. So the play was extremely good. As I was telling my class this semester, I'm teaching a course called Playing America's Game. The top line players, the first half of the rosters of Negro League teams were competitive with any major league squad. They would make those clubs. And you had teams like the Pittsburgh Crawfords that had Josh Gibson, Hall of Famer, behind the plate. Buck Leonard, Hall of Famer, at first base. You had a shortstop, a pitcher, Ray Brown, who was going to be in the Hall of Fame, most likely on next Monday. You had Satchel Paige pitching on that team for a while. You had Oscar Charleston, started center fielder, Hall of Famer. You had a team like that had four Hall of Famers on that same team. That's kind of like the Yankees of the 1920s. You know, they had that level of talent. And as you said, the statistical research that we've done verified a lot of what we knew about the talent of players in the Negro Leagues. And in certain cases, we discovered players that were long forgotten. Red Parnell was one player who we were surprised at. His lifetime average was well over 320. We had known about him, but he came out of Louisiana. He played in Monroe for the Monroe Monarchs initially. And a number of these Southern players that broke in a little later into the league were not as well known by the press. But as we started going through the statistics, like, wow, this guy was a player. Then we started asking some of his contemporaries who are still with us. And it's like, yeah, Red Parnell was quite the player. And so that was one of the really neat things about the project, was discovering players that in certain instances had been forgotten, and now we're able to recover them and put them on the ballot because they merit that consideration.
Yeah, you brought up another point. You look at the regular lot of players that might be eligible for Hall of Fame consideration early in the year, and you have, you know, three or four players. We're going to have one this year, Bruce Sutter, but there are some people that aren't going to make the Hall of Fame. And you have a tough task coming up Monday because every one of the statistics or the achievements of these players and executives all merit. How are you going to choose after having chosen those 39, having to choose from among them? That's going to be difficult.
It's a very difficult decision. The important difference between the two ballots, that is the Negro League ballot that we have before us for this weekend, and the Baseball Hall of Fame's vote with the Baseball Writers Association, is that any player who played a certain amount of service in the major leagues is eligible to be on that writer's ballot. The players who are on our ballot are after a process of screening, and so we already have, you know, top talented all-stars. Every player on this ballot is a multiple all-star player, and so we're talking top-line players, and now we have to pick who were the best of the best. Right now, there's only 18 Negro Leaguers in the Hall of Fame, only one Latino out of those 18. Over 2,600 Negro Leaguers played, so we're not even at 1%. We're not even at the top 1%. And there are a number of players who were highly overlooked in previous elections, such as Cristobal Torriente, who in 1952 was named to the Pittsburgh Couriers first team of the Negro Leagues, All-Stars. And somehow he had escaped the voters and the minds of others who had voted. And Torriente is the only member of that first team who's hasn't been fully considered for the Hall of Fame. And he has a very good shot of being elected. So, you know, again, the research is what's helping guide us to make that vote.
Professor Adrian Burgos, history professor at the U of I, will be among those voting amongst 12 historians and researchers on Monday for inclusion amongst 39 names for the Baseball Hall of Fame. These players and executives were involved in baseball's Negro Leagues. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
And thank you, and hopefully we'll get to talk again after the vote sometime during the summer.
I'd like that.